Hi, and welcome to Grazia Life Advice, Grazia Magazine's podcast. I'm Hattie Crissell, and while your usual host Rhiannon Evans is away for a while, I'll be holding the fort. I'll be interviewing women worth listening to and getting them to share six pieces of advice they really value and the worst piece of advice they've ever received. Our guest this week is Mary Portis. She's the founder of Portis Agency, but you may know her best as Mary Queen of Shops. Mary is a retail expert who rose through the ranks at both Topshop and Harvey Nichols, and her new book, Work Like a Woman, is a manifesto for change. It shares some of the lessons she's learned in her astonishing career and explains why we'd all benefit from taking macho culture out of the workplace. I met Mary here at the Grazia office, and before we even started recording, she'd already told me off for making her what was a frankly, unacceptably weak cup of tea. She was a fascinating guest with tons of advice on carving out a career that works for you. So, over to Mary. I'm here with Mary Portis, who's been running around all over the place talking about her new book, Work Like a Woman. How are you doing today, Mary?
Yeah, I'm a bit tired today.
I'm not surprised.
I am, but only because I had a really good sleep. You know, I woke up about 5:30. I thought, should I get up and do a bit of a stretch and do some Pilates downstairs? No, I'll go back to bed. And then having that extra hour and a half just, it's made me more tired.
Do you normally get up at 5:30?
No, but I woke up 5:30. I do normally get up about 6:15 because okay. Horatio comes bashing into the door.
Yeah.
I'm like, ugh. That's the downside of kids. The early morning call, Saturday or Sunday, no weekend.
Yeah. So you are at this stage surely one of the country's highest achievers. You've got your agency, you've got your living and giving shops. There's one near me, it's very fabulous. And now several books under your belt. How many books is this? Is this your
fourth?
Yes. So have you always had this kind of never ending prolific supply of ideas, or do you have to work at it?
Oh, that's a good question. No one's ever asked me that. That is what I do have. I just have ideas all the time. And it's really funny because now the team around me go, no, that one's not going to happen. We'll put that, we'll just park that one, Mary. And there's times I think I see someone's done something. I said, I wanted to do that. But there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of those people that works 24/7. So my energy has to be focused because I will, and I need to have balance. So I need to know that when I'm really on and being creative and I've got an idea and I want to work on it, I also need the downtime. So I'll never be one of those that's 24/7 in putting every hour in and just,
so
it just doesn't make me excited.
How do you do that? Do you have to have quite strict boundaries about, look, I'm not working tonight and I'm not working this weekend, or is it?
Well, the boundaries make themselves for you because you work to your own rhythm, as it were. And that's what I've learnt to know as I've got older. I mean, gosh, when I was younger, you know, didn't have kids or whatever, I was probably your age, I would be sitting in the office, I'd love it. If the sun goes down, you put the lamps on and you keep working. But then you go with the rhythms of yourself and you understand when you're at your best. And rest is important for me. And or I'll go to the country and sometimes I'll be on my own. I say, no, I want to be on my own. And my wife goes, you want to be on your own down there? I go, yes, I do. And I might just walk in the hills and I'll just have an idea and it will just mould, or someone at the agency will be doing something and I'll call Emily or I'll call Richard and go, you know that thing we're working on? And I know that the freedom has enabled me to be creative. Now, in the old days, I'd have sort of had to manage it myself. Now I have an infrastructure of really good people.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know what I'm actually doing tomorrow. I just about know what I'm doing this afternoon. And I don't mean that. I put myself totally in the present to be the best at what I have in hand then.
Mm.
And that, I think, has been my success. So then you surround yourself by really talented people. You pay them well and you trust them. And they're the ones that will look after that minutiae. I will say, like Emily just said to me, that no, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
And you have to respect them, and everybody should have a proper voice. And then I'm able to be me within that construct.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Does that sound a bit complicated?
No, absolutely. And I feel like I've heard this from other very high achievers as
have
well,
you?
That it's about kind of outsourcing the things that don't need your immediate attention so that you can really focus on what's important.
I remember... when I was going through a really, really tough time, I think it was the breakup of my first marriage, and I remember I just started the business, and I was like, oh my gosh, I have two very young kids. And this very successful businessman said to me, just put the car in the drive for now, park it. The world will keep going. Know that you need to park it for a month. And the minute that I did that, I knew that that part, all the business, don't worry, don't sweat, that will just tick over, focus on your family. And it was just a really good learning thing. And I always think of that visual, know when the car's parked, know when you're driving it, know when to take it out and what lane to go in.
Yeah.
And at what time and when to overtake or not. And it's just, that's the sort of thing I have in my head.
Yeah. Well, that's brilliant. And you're already giving me advice and we haven't even started on the advice section of events. So let's start with the advice you've brought today. So I think your first one was about keeping your sense of humour. Is that right?
Yeah. But actually, when on my way here, I started being a bit naughty. My publisher said to me, you do that when you're a bit bored. And I said, I do. I do naughty things because I like to laugh. I really like to laugh. I mean, and it was really interesting because this weekend I met up with five of my old school friends that I haven't, who I went to infant school with when I was five. And we were back in that classroom still laughing the same way. And I was always the naughtiest one. So, and I just think that being intense, an intense businesswoman, it's just, I just find that deeply unsexy. And I love people with humour and a sense of mischief, but have a great work ethic. That's the thing I think is really important. And life, you have to sometimes laugh at it.
Yeah. Have there been particular periods where you think having a sense of humour has helped carry you through?
I think there's been times where I've had to, I think when I'm laughing to myself, when we missed out on a major account we should have got. You know, and I knew that we presented badly. We came out absolutely exhausted. We'd been flying internationally. We'd working with big clients internationally. And we went off this piece of business, which we should have won. We were the right agency for. But we knew we hadn't because we were rubbish. And as we got out, we were all so tired. And I remember saying to Richard, you were rocking like an old granny in the chair doing that presentation. And he went, didn't I? And we just burst out laughing. We'd lost a massive business. And I look at the work the other agencies doing now and I just think, not good enough. We would have been better. But we laughed because we were just so rubbish. You know, You know, we were just tired and we were in the wrong energy level and we'd worked late the night before. We were trying to catch up. But we still laughed. And that just broke that. And it was no one ever thinking, oh, my God, I feel responsible. We were all in this together.
Yeah.
And so we were able to laugh at each other's inadequacies.
And quite a good way to deal with a failure as well, because I suppose you can dwell on it or you can just say onwards and upwards and get on with the next thing.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if we were consistently failing, I'm not sure I'd be laughing too much and I'm not sure they would be. But I knew that these were my homies. These were the team of people like you do on a magazine. You know you're in this together. You know when the publishing time is, when the deadline is. And there's times where you've missed something or the wrong picture or gone in or someone said something and you have to laugh. But you're laughing with this energy, this united force, which I think is really good. And you never laugh at people. You laugh with people. And it's really, really important. But I'm the biggest kid in the office that'll leave a note on someone's desk that's rude or something, you know, and I'm laughing my head off and they go, oh, God, Mary, grow up.
Okay, so moving on to your second piece of advice.
You have choices. Think carefully about the kind of place where you want to work. Ask questions of your employer. Research the company you might work for. What are their retention rates, staff retention rates? Happy people don't leave jobs in droves, you know. And what's the parental leave policy? You might not be thinking that now at 29, but it's interesting to know. It gives you something of a culture and shows you what they think about that. And how many women do they have in senior management on their board? I think, you know, and I have a young daughter who's just finished university and is applying for work at the moment. And I just see that insecurity. This is a kid who's got a 2-1 out of Oxford. And she's like, Mama, I want to write to someone. And I just think, well, how do I start this letter? And do you think it sounds pushy if I do this? And I'm like, oh, my God, Verity, you're my daughter. And yet you still feel
if Mary Porter's own daughter is struggling with this, I feel better now about all my
worries. You know, I do remember that. And I even remember your editor, who's also out of Oxford, you know, coming round. And we've all been in those places. And somehow that vulnerability, you know, are we good enough, is still there. But here is the thing, and it's a really important thing. You know, I run an agency of over 50 people, and we are always looking for the best people. And sometimes those best people aren't the ones who are arrogant and are out there and pushing themselves forward. And I want those good people to come in and ask about us so that the fit is right. That is important. I know, okay, we're evolved as a business and some businesses aren't, but don't work for them.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Ask those questions. You know, it's a bit like applying to universities. And I always have this thing, what's meant for you won't pass you by. My mother used to say that to me, and I say that to my kids. If you've gone in there with an open heart and the right attitude, you need to do your due diligence. You need to ask those questions. And don't try and change your shape to fit into something that isn't going to be right for you. So right away, ask those. And just feel confident enough. You should be able to ask those. And that will tell you what sort of culture and business you'll be going into.
Because I still have many friends who are nervous about even asking what the pay will be for a job, what the fee will be, or what the salary will be. So, you know, if somebody is feeling, well, I don't want to annoy them by being too pushy, or I don't want them to think that I'm going to be hard work, how do you broach those sort of important questions about the culture and the parental leave?
You have to sit in your room on your own and you face that and you write down those questions and you go, what do I really want to know? What do I really want to know? Mm-hmm. It's like a relationship. You know, you go on that first date. You want to know, have you been in a long relationship before? You do, don't you? You know, do you sleep around a bit?
Yeah.
You know, you want to know, why did your last partner leave? What did it break up? You want to know that, because how are you going to know that person? Yet you sit there and you meekly accept so much stuff. Now, obviously, on your first date, the poor guy will be running for the hills, or woman, if you started like that. But you do know that you want to know that at some point. So I always say, write down what you genuinely want to know of a business. And then face those fears. We have to. Here's the thing, girls. Unless you start doing it, you must do it. You will perpetuate the situation because the guys do it. They do. And unless you do, I can only say to you, it's okay to do it. It is right to do it. And if you came for a job at my business, I would expect you to, and I would respect you. So do it.
Okay,
that's all I can say.
And I suppose also, if a company has a series of interviewees coming in, you know, every time they're hiring for a job and all saying, what's the parental leave policy or whatever, then that company has to become more aware.
They have to come, and that shift will come. I call it the power of goddess. It's happening. I'm telling you, we are going through
that.
This. It is. It is happening. The shift is happening. We were suppressed for so many years, primarily by the church, and power was in the hands of the church. Power is in the hands of politicians. Power is in the hands of big business. Unless we're in there, we ain't going to have a say. And they are absolutely making decisions on our future. We need to do this. This is more than just making the most money. This is having influence where power is and having a voice at the table. We need it.
Yeah, fantastic. And that brings us quite neatly onto your next piece of advice, which I think is about supporting other women.
Yeah, support other women. Your colleagues are your greatest strength, not your enemies. I can't think of anything worse when you see other women knocking other women. It's like, stop this. This is the sisterhood. You need to do it. And also call out other women if they do that to you. This is also where I go about working with your tribe and connecting with your tribe. When you feel that something's going wrong at work, you can bet your bottom dollar someone else will have felt that. So talk with them. Make these little groups. Connect together. Create your own little pressure group just to make life better. It's not to do anything negative, to make life better. So talk about it and have a collective voice. And if something's happening in an organisation or a business you don't like, you can come together rather than just you on your own. It's really, really important. And I remember my days back as a junior at Harrods, my pals, the other women, were just really intrinsic to my success and moving on and feeling their support. And I'd like to feel that I've done the same in turn for them. It's just the way of the world. We can't do it on our own. We just can't. And I look at the women who support me in my business today and the great men. But, you know, I talk openly from my heart to them. I have an MD. You know, she's 15 years younger than me. But, my God, I listen to her.
Yeah.
What makes me think I'm going to know any better? There were experiences I have I can share with her. But she sure as hell shares them back and her life journeys. And I just find that just so supportive. They are my backbone.
I think it's something that I've certainly become more aware of in my 30s. As you move further into your industry, you start to realise how important those relationships are and how it lifts everyone up.
Totally.
Yeah.
It really does. And when I look at programmes like The Apprentice, when they're all fighting each other, I just think, Kel or Er, that is just not the way to live a life. And, you know, there's been times where I was, oh, gosh, and I'd see people and think, oh, I could do better than that. You know, of course, we've all done that. But when you open up your heart and you say to people, you know, we're in this together, and you just show a bit of kindness and mutual respect, it comes back in spades.
Yeah. So your fourth piece of advice is about the fear of failure.
Yeah. We're all afraid of failure, but men don't let it hold them back as much. We need to learn this lesson too. I mean, I've failed many times, but what does it mean? I've had times where I've opened up the newspaper and it's written Mary Queen of Flops on a major, you know, page. And I've just thought, my God, this is bad. And because I've put my head above the parapet, or I've had an opinion and I've got into a political game where you are in that. And so you're there to be knocked. But I've just grown from it. And I know it sounds such an old adage, but I just have grown from it, because I haven't fought back to try and protect my reputation. I've just worked back and created work and stuff that I do that shows who I am. And you know what? People are extraordinary. They see for who you truly are. Mm-hmm. People see through that. And you know what? Being honest and being vulnerable is okay. In fact, it's rather beautiful, and people like it. And I think when you're not honest and vulnerable and you put on this kind of shield, or you lose a bit of yourself. And I think some of the best people that we've ever seen have told the stories of when they failed. And when you have failed, we have 80-20 syndrome in our business, whereas 80%, let's really try and do great. 20%, because we're all going to cock up. I was going to say another word, but I don't know whether I was allowed to use it. Anyway, I fuck up regularly. But as long as, you know, and you just go, I got that wrong. And I don't try and paper over the cracks. Just go, you know, I failed on this one, or I haven't done it as well. It's okay. Mm. It's really okay. And don't be one of those politicians that just lie themselves out of situations and just lie and lie until it gets so bad. Failure is okay. We all make mistakes, and it is how we learn, but it also shows we're human.
Yeah. Is there a particular moment in your career that you look back on and think, well, you know, that was a bit of a disaster, and then this is what came out of it, you know?
I think the worst part that I've ever been was going into doing political stuff and working for government and doing the high street, because I wasn't prepared for the what happens, because I did a report for the Conservatives. People thought I was Conservative. I'm not. And I was doing a piece of work that was right for the public, the right for our community, right for how we should live, which is our high streets. And suddenly I was in a political game. And so it's like when you hear Theresa May say something, of course, the other people are not on her side or trying to pull her down, just write another negative piece. I wasn't prepared for that. And so it came at me, and I just thought, my God, I'm just being me, Mary, trying my best with my sort of slightly Joan of Arc, you know, shield. And they just went for me. And this was just the time of the rise of Twitter, and it was just constant. I just dreaded looking at it. It was just, I actually felt physically sick. But when it really hit bad was when I was like, do you know what? This is going to make me better and braver. And I decided, I remember all my agents were in going, right, we'll get back and we'll speak to the press, you'll be okay. And I remember the head agent around me said, you know what, you're a good person, and you know you're a good person, let's just ride this one out. And we did. It was the best piece of advice I could take. And you know, now some people, I say about it, they've forgotten it, or they don't know, or they see me what I am today. But that was really tough. It was tough when I got staked out after I, you know, told the truth about my brother being the donor of my son, and I was walking out with my wife with, you know, no makeup on, exhausted with a new baby, and paps were there, and you know, after
God,
us
it's
constantly.
Brutal, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is brutal. And you're thinking, I just don't want this. And then it just kept on being written about, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is other people's lives, and just because I'm in the public, they don't have to be dragged into it. And sometimes I go out there being honest Mary and forget sometimes that the impact that can have on others.
Yeah.
My ex-husband gets written about, he's been doorstepped by the lovely Mail on Sunday, and you know, so, and thank God I've always married and been with decent people, and he just tells them to clear off, you know, because
yeah.
But you see, so but I've had to grow from that, and I do forget quite well, actually. I do. I'm quite good at that.
Just put things behind you and move on.
I do. I didn't used to as much, but I think as I've got more confident and more knowing who I am, and I think, well, if that's what people want to do, that's really their problem more than me.
Yeah.
I remember I had this guy who rang me from the Mail, and he was only a young journalist, and he was going after it and after it, and I just said to him, do you really enjoy doing this?
What did he say?
And he was really quiet. He said, not really. I said, well, why? Because you're really bright. And I could tell you something that you'll put as your, you know, that will give you a great headline. But actually, I just really am feeling stressed by this. This is making me feel uncomfortable. How does it make you feel?
Yeah.
And he was like, really sweet, finished the conversation and wrote the most sweetest piece.
Oh, well done.
Well, I mean, that's very rare. I mean, yeah. But it did happen. I was like, oh my God. Because I just thought, I don't want my son doing that.
Yeah. God, you really come up against it when you put yourself out there, don't you?
And the sad thing about that is the good people won't go and do political stuff.
Yeah.
So you end up with the people who are total tossers.
There's something about that in the papers today, actually, saying that women don't put themselves forward to be political candidates because it's such a toxic...
Well, that's why I'm talking about this in my book, which I talked about the time when Jeanette Winston and I went in. And we were fighting to save, you know, the rates, which they eventually decided to put down a bit after 7 years. Thanks. Nice one, Philip Hammond, after the High Street's on its knees. But anyway, and I counted the amount of women who were walking through the corridors compared to men. It was ridiculously low. And here's the thing. When I did my High Street report and I travelled the country, the power of the women who got out and wanted community to work, I would say 90% were women. Who were starting markets, opening creches, because the infrastructure of that social network was absolutely central to them as women in society, the carers, which we are. And yet we're missing them coming into the seats of power because the construct is toxic, political, and quite frankly, a complete bag of shite. And why would you want to work within that? I did it and you actually don't. Well, I want to do what's best. And you go, well, we're going to write about you this way. And we can't do this. We can't do that because that won't go down well with such and such. And you're like, seriously? Seriously? Is this the way I want to live? And if we had women running this country, this running the world, we wouldn't have wars. Yeah. We wouldn't have wars. We wouldn't be looking at another Poppy Day 100 years from now, which there will be. For all the people that are dying in the wars, we just wouldn't have it. We'd have negotiated, we'd have thought about our children, we'd have thought about our parents, we'd have thought about our siblings and gone, there surely has to be another way.
So do you really feel that men and women are fundamentally different in their, you know, brains?
Yes. Yeah. There was a brilliant, an interview that I listened to, which actually inspired me wonderfully by a professor. I think she's at UCL, Helena Cronin, in conversation with Germaine Greer on a feminist talk. I think she did it within our time, which is Melvin Bragg's show. And it was superb. And she said, you just cannot disregard 2 million years of the way men were brought into the world, the way they worked, the way they fought in the world versus women. And you listen to Vanana Shiva, who's another great, I love what she does, and she talks about, you know, men went out to war, the women stayed at home, they found the food, they fed the kids, they created the home. Then men became the capitalists to create wealth. It was again the same sort of fighting. It was, and when you look at business today, it's about how do we make that money? How do we create this wealth? Single-minded looks. Again, the women made the world turn round. And in the end, that's what we will need to survive, are all those values that women have. And Helena Cronin talks about men. If men had to choose a female partner and someone said there's 50 of those women you can go out and shag, they'd shag the lot. And if a woman had to choose her partner for life, who's going to be the father, she'd be more judicious. And she'd say, I'll choose this, because she'll know that the responsibility will be on her shoulder of that family. And also she couldn't cope with all that, nor would she want to be shagging 50 men. We are different. That we are different. Still, so until we admit that and know it, and I've brought out 2 sons, a daughter, I have 3 brothers, 1 sister, I've been brought by a farmer, there is a difference. Sadly, the world of work has been constructed by men for men. It is still alpha, and women have had to lean in.
Yeah.
Women have had to change shape to get to the top. And invariably, alpha women get to the top. And all those incredible other balanced women are left behind. It's the system that brings it down.
Yeah.
Same as politics, which is what you talked about.
Yeah. Fascinating. A lot to think about here. So you've also talked about when you're bringing up kids, the importance of having a support network.
Mm.
So how did that ring true for you? How did that become something you would advise people on?
Well, you know, I just think building a network when your kids, I mean, you start off and you go to those NCT classes, I think, isn't it? Isn't NCT?
Yes, yeah.
And they say, I've got nothing in common with anyone here. And you realise, we're all got babies. We're all having sleepless nights. But I just remember, you know, I didn't have much money, you know, when I first had my kids. And I just literally did not have, you know, a full-time nanny. I couldn't afford it. So that support, and I didn't have, my parents weren't alive, so I didn't have that either. And my sister worked really long hours and was as busy as I was. So I just remember just the weekends even, knowing that you had a little group of people there, you go, right, I'm good. It's a January afternoon on a Saturday. My son was born. It's grey. It's peeing down with rain. You want to shoot yourself,
yeah,
because you have a 2-year-old. And I'm sorry, literally listening to Peppa Pig for the 15th time is my idea of hell. And your mate goes, do you want to come around for a cuppa? And I'll have a mess on my floor and they can play together in the kitchen. You're like, yes, yes, just give that to me. Or we'll both go to the swings together and we'll push and do inane chat and get ourselves together and through this. That support, even my neighbour, I had a neighbour who was older than me, she had older children, she was there for me, you know, and it was just connecting with your friends and people, doesn't matter what age, and just having that social infrastructure and also saying, I need help this time, is just vital in life. It's the same in business. You know, we're not an island. And also, be vulnerable.
Yeah,
I hated the friends. Like, man sleeping through the night. I go, what? Mine isn't. I'm exhausted. I can't bear it. Or those women that go, yes, I get up at 5:30, do yoga. You thought that was going to be me, didn't you? And then I'll sort of have a little lesson on my Mandarin because I get it up to scratch. And then I'll go online because China will still be open and I'll do some deal. And then I'll get the kids up and I'll feed those. And oh, by the way, I've got 8 children. Did you not know? And then I run to the bank and my husband's very helpful because he makes sure the au pair and the nanny and the cook's picked up. And give me a break. And they're the ones who you get on the front of the magazine going, aren't they amazing? No, what's amazing and what gets you through is saying, this ain't easy sometimes. And there's times where I've sobbed with my friends who think I've got an amazing life, but my real pals will be the ones sitting there with a glass of wine going, oh, are you okay, Paul? So I go, no, I'm just knackered now. Let's just sit there. Or they want to come round for dinner. I go, do you mind if you cook it? And they go, no problem, I'll cook it. And they're the great mates. Or they'll come down to the country, go, can we come down to the house? Go, right, yes, anyone can stay, anyone can do it, but I can't do the hosting. I have to give something up. I'm not going to be coming down, you know, slipping into my little fluffy mules and going, morning, what's for breakfast? Ain't going to happen.
I love this.
Yes, and then friends all just come in and do it. Oh, and why not? It's like a bunch of girls at uni, you know. Do it together. Don't expect me to be, you know, the hostess with the mostess. I might have the lovely house of the country. Share it with me, please. I need you there, but I can't do all that. And that's the pals that you have. And they're not the ones who are just doing the most high profile. They're the friends who connect with me and love me.
Yeah, that's so liberating. So your sixth piece of good advice is about sort of choosing carefully what you do and don't say yes to.
Yeah. Yeah, I especially on social media, I mean, I absolutely hate networking. You wouldn't think, I just can't bear it.
But you know everyone already, so you don't need to know.
Well, I never liked it anyway. I just didn't like it because I always used to think I have to sort of put on a persona to talk with you and chat with you, and it's just not me. And I never used to be one on the phone. I don't phone people. Face-to-face is for me. Great, I've bumped into you. And if you're in that right energy space, something magical happens. But like just chatting, I'm terrible. Even my daughter and my son said, you never rang us when we were at uni. I was like, if you needed me, you knew. And I always used to think they're having a great time. But if there's a problem, they know I'm there. But I just couldn't go, how are you? I'm just rubbish at it. But the worst is all those people that you see turning up to the opening of an envelope or any event. So they want to either put it on social media or they just want to sort of, you know, keep on top of the gossip, know what's happening. And you kind of see through that in the end, you know? And I just think it's a waste of your energy. Go to stuff that you think is really going to feed your soul and really going to make a difference. And actually, or have a sense of purpose about it. And I'm not saying turn down everything, because some magical things, I can often be a grump and my wife will go, oh, please turn up, then I end up having a great time. But it's just that feeling you've got to be there for the sake of their no. Ask yourself, why am I going?
Yeah.
And do I need to go? And is this something that's going to benefit me? Am I going to enjoy it? And just keep a balance on it. Keep on top of it so that you're not always sort of out there with a load of baggage friends who hang on just because you're there having a drink with them.
Yeah. So don't get sucked into FOMO, basically.
FOMO. It? Yeah, there's a lot of FOMO going
Stand
on,
Stand up to FOMO.
Stand up to FOMO.
Okay. And now please tell me your piece of bad advice that you will not be following.
Well, I nearly did, only for about 10 minutes. So I went out to lunch with this guy who'd sold his business for a lot of money. A lot of money. And I was like a bit jealous. I was like, God, how did he do it? You know, how did he make so much money? He's talented. And I said, I asked him some advice. You know, I was changing the structure of the agency. And he said, employ an utter ruthless bastard to do your finance. And he used another word for it. And I thought, aren't utter ruthless bastards expensive? You know, I probably do need that. Someone is just going to be on those numbers going, Fortress, we need to go after this. It's going to make you rich.
And sack this person.
Sack that bar. And I was like, yep. And I was like, stop it. And I have the least utter bastard doing my finance. And I think I'd call him a hippie, practically. He is the strongest, kindest, collaborative, creative person who I trust. And it's just so much better. He never answers his phone, which annoys the tits off me. So he's never fully on, but I know he might be climbing a mountain or mountain biking or putting his kids on his back with his wife and going to South of France and finding some esoteric bottle of wine. And I kind of love that. When I need him, he's never there. But when I really need him, I trust him with my life.
Okay.
And that's much more important.
You don't have to be ruthless to be brilliant.
You so don't have to be.
That's all of our advice. I've loved speaking to you. Thank you so much for coming in.
You.
And best of luck with Work Like a Woman, which I will be recommending to everyone.
Thank you. In those stockings.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much to Mary. I loved speaking to her and I hope you found her advice as interesting as I did. Her book, Work Like a Woman, is out now. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please do subscribe, rate us, review us, tell everyone you know about us. It really helps spread the word. See you next week for more advice from women worth listening to.